Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Time now for this week's Home and Lifestyle Tips with the one and only Therese Davey on the line. Good morning, Therese. You've a busy morning there this morning.
Right outside my window, Wendy, and it's a joy to hear in another way. 25 children have appeared on the tennis court outside my window and are playing wonderfully and loudly in a lovely spring sunny morning. It's the first time it's ever happened, but it's great to see children out playing in the fresh air. Their timing's a bit odd.
As they should be. Okay, so what's your website of the week this week then, Therese?
www.stpatricksfestival.ie, telling you what's on, where, all over the country, fringe events and all kinds of things. And I know it's a couple of weeks away, but maybe you need to start planning or booking things or talking about it in the house, what you're going to do over that bank holiday weekend. And I can see for the first time you can buy a grandstand ticket, Wendy, for the parade, which is something that's always put me off going into the parade, not being able to see or standing for hours and not being able to see when you get there. But you can buy a grandstand ticket for guess how much?
Go on.
68 euros.
Oh, right. Okay. That's a bit much now if you have a few kiddies in the family as well.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I think let's keep watching it on the television for another couple of years.
Or have a little mosey round. There? Yeah. What's out there this week?
Found a great cloth wristband type thing, a neat thing, with a zip pocket for holding keys or money when you're out running or walking or when you have no pockets. €2 it cost me. It's a brilliant idea. It's very slimline. Mine is already being admired and passed on. I have to go downtown to buy another one at lunchtime today because it's being much admired, and I eventually gave it away. But for €2, it's a dead handy thing to have for the keys and the money.
Very good and simple as well.
Very simple, and everyone should have one in it for everyone in the house. Tiger. Great things in Tiger.
They have the most random selection of wonderful things, that store. Okay, so your job of the week has intrigued me. I'm hoping tea bags isn't on this list, Therese.
No, it's not. I should have put them on, though. I should have put them on. I was looking up something to talk about this morning, and I found 20 things you can use twice before dumping.
Good, yeah. We like that.
Recycling is good, saving money is good, being inventive is good. We'll see what people think at the end of the 20 tips. Dry cleaning bags, all that lovely plastic that comes with your dry cleaning. I've said be careful of it before. You don't leave clothes stored in it. It's not good. But seemingly they help protect clothes from wrinkles when packing. So use them up, put your clothes in them before you pack them, and it saves the wrinkles. I think they're also great for wrapping a Christmas wreath or dried flowers to keep the dust away. So always useful to keep those handy, but make sure you keep them out of reach because they can be really, really dangerous. Yeah. Item number 2 is butter wrappers. Once you've removed the block of paper butter from its wrapping, place the wrapping in a plastic container, keep it refrigerated and use it for greasing tins and things.
Yeah, so there's just a little bit of kind of butter that's left on it that you can just use it to grease tins or cake tins or something like that.
Absolutely, and I see my mum used to just put itself on the bottom of the baking tin, and she'd have to peel it off the bread then, not even greasing the tin, just using it itself, which was clever. It also gave protection as well. It was an extra layer of foil, so it stopped burning. Business cards. Using the other blank side of the business card, it's a lovely size of a piece of card, and using it to label things. Strong piece of card, good piece of sellotape, it's great. So tape it to the outside of the lid or the side and you can see at a glance what's in there. Used envelopes. Now this was an interesting one. I'd never heard of before. Cut a corner off the envelope and use it as a bookmark. So you're creating a kind of a sleeve, so you're slitting the envelope on two sides, popping it over the page, and no more folded corners,
yes,
and
even
easy bookmark.
Yes, and I get in trouble all the time for folding the corners in on book pages, so there you go.
Do you do that?
I'm sorry, I'm one of those people, and my husband gives out to me for it all the time.
But also great for storing garden seeds because it's paper and they're dry, or making labels. They're handy as well. Cardboard egg cartons. Now, we used to use these for calculating tables when we were children, you know, mathematical tables. But this is make a homemade fire starter. And so I was immediately impressed with that particular tip. So you fill the holes of the empty egg carton with sawdust, dryer lint. There's a use for your dryer lint, some scraps, and pour melted wax over them, the little ends of candles that you've been saving. And they're great for starting a fire. So you cut up the little sections of the egg boxes then and throw them in. You light the cardboard and you have a free fire lighter. Great for campfires. Tissue boxes, and I didn't quite get this one, but when you're empty, have an empty tissue box, use it as a plastic bag dispenser.
Yeah, well, I get it, but it probably needs to be a large enough tissue box. You probably only fit, what, two or three plastic bags in there at once?
No, I still think tuck them into the sock or something and hang them up, absolutely. Plastic grocery bags, well, people use them all the time as a bin liner, as a paint tray cover. For keeping the paint, while you're, if you disappear off when you're mid painting, it'll stop things falling into the paint. I get that.
For children or, you know, people.
Yeah. Plastic bread clips. Using them as tiny scrapers, taking off price tags or labels. Good for scratching lottery tickets. But the tiny scraper, I like the idea for taking off the price tags and stuff. One little plastic bread clip. Newspapers. Use them in the bottom kitty litter boxes. Use them as clean up for kitty litter or cat litter boxes.
Budgies or whatever. Fine.
Ever, yeah. Newspapers, a ton of uses. Plastic strawberry baskets. Now, this one I had to look up. Uses a homemade bubble machine. So I had to go and look what an American strawberry basket. They look very different to our strawberry and fruit baskets. They're full of little holes. You can see right through them. So I thought, I still like the idea. But how about cutting some extra holes in the bottom of your plastic fruit containers? And then you dip them in the bubble solution and wave them about. And you get all these loads of small little bubbles.
That will definitely go down well in our house. It's amazing the entertainment bubbles can provide to children to raise.
Of all ages and of all generations, trust me. And I also saw someone using a fly swatter, dipping them into the bubbles. I thought that was really clever too. And using that and waving it about and getting loads of bubbles. Very clever. Cleaner spray bottles. Empty them out, but you really need to clean them out thoroughly and put in your own homemade clinger into them or your own, even for spraying plants either. Some plants need to be sprayed, the leaves of them, so they can be handy for that. But you really, really need to be sure you clean out the bottles.
Yeah,
the mesh from veggie bags and fruit bags, we've talked about this one before, they're great for cleaning as a scourer. And I said they're great for cleaning the car bulbs in the past when all the flies get stuck in them. And you just wipe them with the little plasticky, you know what I mean, the kind of mesh that fruit comes in. It's a great little thing for scrubbing or removing things outside and around the house. And gardening season is starting, so put that smelly soap you got at Christmas that you don't like into a net, into your mandarin orange net, and hang it by the garden tap. And it's dead handy for hand washing because you can use the soap for washing and you can use the net for getting rid of the soil off your hands. It's a really handy little tip for those fruit
clean
nets.
Clean and exfoliated. I like it.
Absolutely. Styrofoam food trays, you can clean them and cover them with paper and use them for gifts for when you're passing on baking gifts. That's clever too, because I make pâté at Christmas and I have to get my dad to cut out the card and cover it with tinfoil. This solves that little problem. The next time I get a styrofoam food tray that's clean and good, wash it and dry it and have it handy for exactly that purpose. But you need place to store these things too, Wendy. That's the other thing about that, you know?
Yeah.
Paper towel and cardboard rolls. Use them to wrap the Christmas lights. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Use them to keep the wires tidy under a table. Just slip them and put the wires in them and to keep the wires tight and tidy. Or to wrap extension cords and leads and things. You can tuck them into the cardboard rolls and keep them handy and tidy. There's another one there, packing foam peanuts. They're a nuisance when they get loose and fall all over the place. They really are. But you can reuse them for packing onwards, or you can use them for Christmas decorations.
All right. As in for...
With a string through them, yeah.
Oh, right. I thought you meant for packing them away safely.
No, for children, if you need an activity come next November, just get the packing foam peanuts and get them to paint them and run string through them. It can be an option for their own homemade Christmas tree. But what I saw, another tip for them, was putting them in the bottom of large plant pots and cover them with newspaper. You use less soil, it's good for drainage, and it makes the pots easier and lighter to lift because they're not full of clay or soil. Half of them is the little peanuts. And it's a clever one. And then the other one I liked was laundry bottle caps and scoops. Wash them thoroughly and use them in the sandbox or in the pool or as bath bathtub toys or pet food scoopers. Really clever. Little. They're colourful, they're bright, they're bouncy.
They're big enough as well, yeah, as a pet food scooper or something, yeah.
Yeah, our bathtub toys, just as something different introduced in the colour and moving the water in. Because children, you know this, children love the water and being able to mess with the water in the bath. And the final one was the cereal liner bags. Now, they're very good bags, your cornflake bags or bran flake bags. They're quite strong and they're very handy for freezing. Because they're heavy enough, you can put stack things between them like burgers or freeze pastry, and you can cover food in the microwave with them. So you can use them. Yeah. So I thought there were some good tips.
Really
in
good
there
tips
for
there.
Reusing things
and practical everyday stuff that you actually need. Therese, as always, got lots of great ideas today. I like that because they're kind of nice jobs of the week things to look out for rather than turning mattresses or washing pillowcases. So we're happy with that today. We'll talk to you the same time next week.
It'll soon be mattress time in turn. Thanks, Wendy, for reminding me.
Oh no! Oh dear!
Next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Well, in 2017, the government promised that no child with scoliosis would have to wait more than 4 months for treatment. But sadly, this target has not been reached, with many children waiting 12 months or longer. In fact, the waiting lists are still so long that parents are bypassing the public system and paying for private consultations to try and basically get their children treated faster. And while some progress has been made since 2017 in terms of children having to travel abroad for treatment to progress, there's not really been a lot made, to be honest with you, and I'm sure families are really feeling that, and their children indeed, many of whom are really suffering quite badly. On the line to tell us more, we have Claire Cowell from the Scoliosis Advocacy Network. Claire, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy.
Well, first of all, Claire, just tell us a little bit about what scoliosis is and what sort of impact that it has on someone who has it.
Scoliosis is a curvature or twisting of the spine, and I suppose it can present at different ages. So you have congenital scoliosis, where a child is actually born with scoliosis. You have early onset scoliosis, so a young child, maybe, an infant, toddler. And then you have adolescent scoliosis, which presents around 10 or 11. Often that's the one that is mostly known in the public media. So again, you have adult degenerative scoliosis as well. So they are different types and different ages.
And in general, though, who does it affect more? Is it children and teenagers or adults, Claire?
Well, I suppose it is the children and teenagers that we focus on as such, because, it's very important if a young child especially has scoliosis that they have timely treatment. Because their heart and lungs are developing, they need to get that treatment so that they actually, are able to have proper lung function in adult life. So it's really important, as I said, for especially the younger cohort, early onset congenital scoliosis, that they have access to timely care.
Well, then talk to me about the impact of the fact that so many young people have to wait such a long time for treatment. What sort of an impact does this have?
Oh, huge. I mean, my own son, he waited 15 months for his surgery. And during the 15 months, his whole quality of life deteriorated, his lung function reduced. He would actually have to come home from school early. He would be very tired. He was very tearful. And it just is such an impact on a child's life when they're waiting, and they need care. And the thing is that this surgery actually is life-changing for children. And I suppose it's really important to say it's not just surgery either. Sometimes it can be casting and bracing. So usually with children who have scoliosis, they try to cast and brace first to hold off surgery. And if there is long waits for care, that means then they miss that window for casting and bracing. So it's a huge effect on children.
In terms of then what the waiting lists are like in Ireland at the moment, have they improved in any way, Claire, in recent years?
They have, absolutely. And I mean, we have to acknowledge that. And it has been hard work. And in fairness, we are so lucky in Ireland. We have amazing surgeons. We have amazing nurses. We have amazing staff, physios, occupational therapists that care for our children in the hospital environment. But unfortunately, the waits are still too long. So they have come down. Maybe a year or two ago, wait for an outpatient appointment for scoliosis, you could have been looking at 2 years at least in Crumlin Hospital, whereas now it's around 12 months for an outpatient appointment. It's still too long. I think Temple Street are, doing much better. They seem to be actually on top of their list at the moment. So that's a real positive. So they are positive. But I suppose we must strive for better. We're in a first world country, and there no child should be left, you know, deteriorate on wait lists. So we need to strive to get this fixed now.
One of the stories that was in the newspapers last week was that of parents essentially paying private consultants, you know, €200 per appointment to try and get their children treated sooner, ultimately then in the public system, which shows really that there's a two-tier system and that something is going wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's very unfair. It's just an unfair situation. No parent should have to pay for their child's consult privately. It, you know, every child publicly should have the same access, and it should be a level playing field. But at present, it's down to, you know, if a parent has the ability to pay, or even the knowledge, because sometimes parents don't have the knowledge, you know, that you can actually skip, waiting for the outpatient public. So they don't have that knowledge. So it's just a very unequal system at the moment. And it means that some children are getting quicker access to care, while other children who are completely and wholly dependent on the public system are left languishing on a wait list. We would say that we need to see a day where every child has the same access, and it shouldn't be down to a parent's ability to pay if your child has timely access to care.
What about that, Claire, families who have to resort to travelling to other European countries for operations? Does this happen often?
Not as much, no. I suppose it's scoliosis is a complex condition as such, especially in a younger child. And again, I can refer to my own son's case. So his surgery will require more surgeries. So most times parents will want to stay in Ireland because they need follow-up specialised care in the Irish health system. But for parents then who it is a one-off surgery, sometimes in the adolescent, it is and can be a viable option to travel. There was an outsourcing initiative introduced under the Action Plan for Scoliosis, but unfortunately as such, that really failed. 80 patients were supposed to travel abroad to have their surgery, and the whole point to this was to clear the backlog of cases so that we would be as such starting fresh with, you know, increased capacity within the system, increased resources and no backlog of cases. Now, we do have, as such, increased capacity and increased resources, but we still have a backlog of cases because, really, the outsourcing initiative failed.
So in terms of then just putting in context what was proposed in 2017 and what has been delivered by the government, maybe tell us a bit more about that, Claire.
Yeah, well, I suppose, firstly, we were promised, Minister Simon Harris promised us that no child would wait longer than 4 months for scoliosis surgery once a clinical decision was made that that surgery was required by the end of 2017. And that has never happened. You know, the wait times for surgery can be 9 to 12 months, again, in Crumlin, which is just too long. It's just unacceptable that our children are left wait so long. Again, Temple Street has a shorter wait time. And, you know, this is something that needs to be highlighted. Again, it's pot luck who a GP refers to. If your GP refers to Temple Street, chances are you will have a quicker route through the system. Whereas if your GP refers to Crumlin, your child could be left, you know, up to a year to wait to just see a surgeon for an assessment. And again, it's an unfair system. And, you know, Children's Health Ireland since January has become the one entity. So all these hospitals now are under the one entity, and legally they're the one hospital. And yet we see disparities in the access and treatment time for children. And that's something that now must be tackled, you know.
And it's scary to think, Claire, as you say, that it's just kind of potluck, essentially, depending on what doctor you go to and where you're referred to.
Yeah, and it is. And, you know, again, this is absolutely, we have amazing doctors. There's no parent, I think, in the system, you know, when they're seen and, you know, go through the treatment, can complain that their doctor, you know, or their nurses are not up to world-class level. We have brilliant doctors. It's just to get to see them and access them. And the unfairness that some doctors, you know, you can see quicker, other doctors you have to wait a long time, and the fact that depending on the hospital, the wait times can be very different. And again, these are the one hospital. So this needs to be tackled now because it's not fair for children. Even down to the types of surgery a child can have, it depends on the hospital the child attends. So, you know, one hospital may do one type of surgery where the other does another type. And again, you know, it should be a level playing field that is based on clinical needs. So if a child requires surgery, every option should be available to that child, not just depending on the hospital they go to. So, you know, we want to see a standardisation of care. We want to see access to treatment that's timely. We want to see children getting the chance for physiotherapy, for casting and bracing without having to go straight onto a surgery waitlist, you know, once they've had that assessment, because they've missed out that window for conservative treatment.
It's going from one waiting list to another waiting list.
Yeah,
essentially, when time is of the essence. Some very salient points, Claire, just in terms of what other progress needs to be made or what needs to happen. If you were sitting down with Simon Harris tomorrow, what would you be saying to him, Claire?
Well, I suppose, firstly, it's very important to point out that Simon Harris has completely, you know, had no meaningful engagement with parents with over 12 months. You know, there's been a refusal on his part to meet with parents, and I think that needs to be pointed out. He's, you know, promises have been broken to parents, and parents are very cross and, you know, upset over it. They're watching their children still deteriorate on the list. And I suppose the main issue is that he needs to deliver on the access to care. You know, just looking at the wait times in the Children's Health Ireland, there's over 3,000, nearly 3,500 children waiting to see an orthopaedic consultant in the service. And that's not acceptable. There's over 820 children waiting for surgery across all orthopaedics, not just scoliosis. And again, you know, that's not acceptable. The lists are absolutely out of control. And somebody needs to show leadership and, you know, like things like the outsourcing initiative, if it had been backed properly, if it had, you know, worked, it would have meant maybe the backlog wouldn't be as bad today. And so we need to see real action now, not just words, we need to see action.
Yeah, by basically just making empty promises is not any good to the people who are suffering with scoliosis, that's certainly
very clear. No, absolutely not. And again, as I said, it's pushing parents into the private health system. They're parents that feel they have no option, only to basically, you know, beg, borrow or steal to pay for scans, to pay for orthotics, to pay for waiting appointments to see consultants. And it's just so unfair. You know, there needs to be, as I said, a standardization that all children have timely access to care, and that, you know, that we can trust in the system. Because at the moment, parents are very, you know, upset that their child is left to wait. When they get sent to, say, for example, Crumlin Hospital, there's no reply to say your child will be waiting like 6 months, your child will be waiting 12 months to see a consultant. So parents are given no information, and therefore they can't make informed choices. And oftentimes then they do panic and they do go to see consultants private because there's no time frame given. So we're asking for communication from the hospitals, we're asking for, you know, access again, that children are not left to wait on wait lists.
Claire, thanks so much for joining us on Spirit Radio this morning. That's Claire Cahill there from the Scoliosis Advocacy Network. Of course, the 2019 Oscars took place in Hollywood last night. It was the 91st Academy Awards, and with some refreshing acceptance speeches, I have to say, no host for the second time in three decades. Some stunning performances. I just watched Lady Gaga's performance of Shallow with Bradley Cooper, and great performances from Queen for Bohemian Rhapsody nominations, of course, as well, and Stars Born had so many nominations too. And there was interesting awards on the, I think always with the Oscars is a few that you don't expect to actually pick up the actual final prize, and we'll be talking about some of that today. Detainment, which was one of the Irish, which was up for the Irish short film, didn't win the Oscar in the end, but The Favourite, which won Best Actress, which that Olivia Colman won for, was co-produced by Element Pictures, which is a Irish production company, so that's pretty cool. Okay, Anya, I think it's probably safe to say you're catching the highlights today, or did you stay up all night watching the Oscars?
Catching the highlights. My sleep's too important to me, Wendy. Yeah. But yeah, like you say, I mean, a few surprises, a few predictables in there. But it's always a great night, you know, the Oscars, even if you're not watching it live and you're just looking back at clips the next day.
Well, as I said, just watching the performance of which won Best Original Song, which was from A Star Is Born, the song Shallow, which we play often here on Spirit Radio. Stunning performance by Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Also, her dress was absolutely beautiful. I have to say, a lot of the dresses this year were very chic, very classy. Really, really like the style of many of the ladies that I saw.
You can't go wrong with a little black number, or rather a voluminous black number.
It was very voluminous, yes.
And Lady Gaga's
and the old school, you know, the silk gloves up to the elbows and all that sort of stuff. One of the things that I thought was lovely was Olivia Colman for The Favourite. She won Best Actress. I think it was really obvious from her speech, her acceptance speech, that she really didn't think that she was going to win. Have a little listen to this.
To be in this category with these extraordinary women, and Glenn, close. You've been my idol for so long, and this is not how I wanted it to be. And I think you're amazing. I love you very much. My mum and my dad. My kids are at home and watching. Look. Well, if you're not, then well, kind of. Well done. But I sort of hope you are. This is not going to happen again. And my husband Ed, my best friend. I love you so much. 25 years, you've been my best supporter. And he's going to cry. I'm not. And
that was a little bit of Olivia Colman's acceptance speech for the Oscar for the best supporting actress and not sorry sorry the best actor and not supporting the best actor for her role in The Favourite. And you know what, if you heard the whole speech, she also talked about how she used to work as a cleaner and she loved that job, but she used to, you know, when she'd be working away, I don't know, have you ever done this, Sonia, doing your Oscar acceptance speech into the Spirit Radio microphone when you're off air
with your hairbrush
or into the hairbrush, but it was just a really powerful message, because it might sound cheesy, but she was saying, you know, I used to do that when I was working as a cleaner, and here I am accepting an Oscar. And I suppose she's not your traditional, you know, Hollywood actress, even talking about being married for 25 years, but brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to hear.
She's very unassuming. She comes across certainly
comes across very, very unassuming. So I'll have to go and see that one.
There was actually a nice piece in the Irish Independent this morning about Ed Gainey, who is the co-founder of Element Pictures, who co-produced the film The Favourite, and how Ed couldn't wait to get back on a plane home to Dublin to walk his son to school, get a coffee and wander into work. So he's clearly not part of the whole Hollywood set. Yeah.
So one of the other big winners, of course, was Bohemian Rhapsody. Rami Malek won an award there for that, for Best Actor.
He did indeed. And I think that was the Bohemian Rhapsody film that was expected that it would do well in general, because it's sort of, in all the pre-Oscar award ceremonies, it has been cleaning up. But it is an excellent picture. It really is. And he certainly plays the role amazingly well. And I can't remember how many hours he spent studying, you know, Freddie Mercury for all of them, his moves, his facial gestures, everything. But I mean, he is excellent, and it's a great film if anyone hasn't seen it.
I think we have a little clip of Rami, do we?
I think we do indeed.
My kids are at home and watching. Look. Well, if you're not, then
that's Olivia Colman. We'll throw her down and we'll try and get Rami Malek up now, who won Best Actor for Bohemian Rhapsody. I actually saw him being interviewed a good few times. Again, he just comes across as this really down to earth, a normal guy who obviously takes his art very, very seriously, and he took the role extremely seriously. And one of the big surprises was obviously Green Book. We'll talk about that, but let's have a listen to Rami Malek first.
He made a film about an immigrant who lived his life just unapologetically himself. And the fact that I'm celebrating him and this story with you tonight is proof that we're longing for stories like this.
That was Rami Malek there, just accepting the Best Actor award there. One of the other things, I don't know if you saw this, Sonia, on Twitter, was obviously a lot goes into the designing of the Oscar stage and what it looks like, and people on Twitter saying that it was meant to represent, you know, power and creativity and femininity, you know, all these sort of things. But people on Twitter were saying, no, it looks like Donald Trump's hair, apparently. So that was that was the artistic interpretation that others had as well. One of the ones that probably isn't as surprise was, you know, A Star Is Born winning Best Original Song. But certainly I would say, from the perspective of Lady Gaga, that she was sort of a surprise. I saw the film, I loved the film. I can't get the music out of my head. I love it. I love the soundtrack too. But I think she surprised a lot of people with her ability as an actor. And I'd say she didn't think she would find herself singing, you know, an Oscar winning song.
Well, do you know, this is kind of funny, I suppose. The day that the film, I had some time off, and I actually, my friend suggested, oh, going to see this film. It was a matinee, you know, kind of a matinee in the afternoon, and it was the day that it came out. I'd never heard of it. I wasn't kind of at the time in the world of films, and it was sort of a distraction. So we went to see this film and I knew nothing about it, didn't know who was in it. And as the film was kind of making its, you know, it was kind of unfolding, I thought, she's very familiar, that girl. She's very familiar. And at the very end, you know, I saw Lady Gaga and I couldn't, I mean, actually, she was such an amazing actress in the film.
You didn't make the connection.
I didn't make the connection. And because she didn't really look like herself until sort of a little bit later on in the film. But I just thought her acting was unbelievable. I nearly thought she'd be, you know, that she could even be nominated, I mean, she could be up there for Best Actress.
Yeah, but I think we have a little clip of Miss Gaga herself as well. But yeah, certainly a surprise and definitely recommend going to see that film. I really, really enjoyed it. And
to my sister, my soulmate, I love you. My family's here. I love you, Mom and Dad, Bradley. There is not a single person on the planet that could have sang this song with me but you. Thank you for believing in us. Thank you so much.
There's Lady Gaga there. Oh, all the emotional Oscar teary speeches, you know. Yeah. So what were the other winners then of the night, Anya, that stood out?
The other, well, I suppose the best film went to Green Book, which I have to say I haven't yet seen, but I'm now really looking forward to it.
I know, it's
going to
be one of those ones that everyone... It's been kind of an understated film. It's the story of an African-American jazz musician and composer, Don Shirley and Tony Valenga, and he's an Italian-American nightclub bouncer. And basically, he finds himself driving Shirley through a tricky tour of the 1960s Deep South and the friendship that emerges through that. So a very interesting storyline, but I think it's definitely a film that's been underplayed, but now that it's won the Oscar. But people were expecting Roma to win the Oscar. I haven't seen it on Netflix, but I've heard really mixed reports. There's a story in the paper today saying, did they try to buy the Oscar? Basically, they spent more money trying to market the Best Picture, run, I suppose, than they actually did on making the film itself. So it's interesting, isn't it?
They did pick up quite a few awards. They've got Best Foreign Language Film. They got Best Cinematography. So they beat Robbie Ryan for the Cinematography Award. And I believe they did get a third Oscar. Best Director as well for Alfonso Cuarón. They did reasonably well, but they got pipped at the post for Best Picture. We've got Best Original Score went to Black Panther.
Which I have to say, if you haven't seen this, it's obviously it was up for the Oscar this year, but it was out in the cinemas last year. I'm a huge fan of superhero comic book movies, which is what this is, but it was so, so different to anything I'd ever seen before. The storyline in it had much more meat in it than you would usually expect from that kind of genre. I was totally gripped by it. I'd really recommend it. Even if you're not into the superhero movies, this one is absolutely fantastic. And I went to see it with my brother. We both really enjoyed it.
But actually, it got three Oscars as well. So not alone did it get Best Original Score, it got Best Costume Design and Design Prize. So it did really well. Then Supporting Actors, we got Green Book. How do we pronounce this? Mahershala Ali. He got Best Supporting Actor for Green Book. And then Best Supporting Actress went to Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk. That's one that's marketed quite a lot.
Yes.
Advertisements are always popping up for If Beale Street Could Talk.
Well, we have a few films put on our list anyway to watch in the coming months, but it seemed to be a very entertaining celebration. I'm sure people will be watching clips from it all day today. Anya, thanks so much for giving us a little bit of an insight into what was on at the Oscars. There was no host, by the way. I think I mentioned that in the interview.
Second time in 3 decades.
Something like that. So Kevin Hart meant to present, but then he didn't in the end. There was a campaign for people saying that Graham Norton should be doing it and that he would have been great fun. I agree with that. I think he'd be great.
Yes, I think he would.
And safety on the internet is back in the news today, this time over concerns being a new game, a new craze called the Momo Challenge. If you're anything like me, I think myself and many other parents, probably it's the first time they've heard of it. And the principles of online safety, of course, are staying the same, even though there's different apps, different games, different things that we kind of hear about that we say, okay, gosh, I need to see if my child is using this and what I can do about it. Online to give us her thoughts, we've Cliona Curley, the Programme Director of Cyber Safe Ireland. Cliona, good morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy.
So first of all, do we know much about this game, the Momo Challenge?
Well, I mean, to be honest, Wendy, I can't tell you any more than I've read in the media. We haven't, you know, seen any evidence of this actually happening in Ireland. We're not coming across it in the schools. But what it is it's, I mean, it's definitely a concept, you know, that has been out there for a good few months now. It just seems to have come to the attention of Ireland over the last week or so.
So the game kind of sets the user challenges, and that it's been linked in other countries for these challenges being kind of dangerous ones.
Well, you know, like honestly, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of YouTube videos that have been made about it. You know, it's more this concept. So there is this very scary image. Which I don't think was created for this purpose, but has been used of this this female figure, which is quite creepy looking. And it has been reported that you know, kids have seen this image and that they've then been contacted on WhatsApp. Now, we haven't seen any evidence of that, but what I can see is that there is, you know, it's like a. Like lots of other kind of online crazes, it's something that has grown legs, and you know, there has been a lot of you know, particularly on YouTube, you know, quite scary videos made around this theme that, you know, if this person is instructing you and that you're cursed if you you know, if you don't go along with it. But as far as we can see, like, there's been quite sensationalist reporting on it. You know, there isn't actual evidence that this has resulted in self-harm or that, you know, it is happening in the way that's been reported.
I suppose, Cliona, it's probably just one of those stories that it just kind of reminds parents of just sometimes how children can be vulnerable, of course, when it comes to what they're doing online. Or certainly for me, my feeling is whenever I read these stories saying, I've never even heard of this game or app or whatever it is, and you can feel a little bit overwhelmed with just everything that's
Definitely.
Out there.
Yeah, and there's a real danger of that. There's also, you know, a danger that parents read about this and they think, okay, well, I just need to look out for that and then everything else is fine. When the reality that we know on the ground is that, you know, I mean, we're a kids charity. We spend a lot of time in schools talking to kids, you know, from about third class up, so 8 to 13-year-olds. And the reality on the ground is a huge number of them are on social media and messaging apps, and a huge number are on online gaming apps, and loads of them watching YouTube videos, some of them making YouTube videos. So kids are being exposed to kind of scary content like this, you know, on a fairly regular basis. So really important that I suppose that parents focus on you know, their kids' internet usage as a whole. And, you know, are they online? If they're online, who are they talking to? What kind of stuff are they watching? What are they watching when they're on play dates and you know, in other kids' houses? So the most important thing is that parents are keeping an eye on things, and also that they're having lots of conversations about it and making it really clear that, you know, you can always come and talk to me if there's anything that scares you or anything that worries you. And this is really important, Wendy, because, you know, and I'm sure you know yourself, like a kid's greatest fear in life sometimes is that they'll be taken off an app or they'll be taken, you know, a device will be taken away if they come and tell you about problems with it. So really, really important.
It's about those lines of communication and just having and making the kind of atmosphere where your kids will be comfortable talking to you.
Exactly. Yeah, and making it normal, you know, making it normal to talk about, you know, what they like online, what they don't like. And that's something you can do from a really young age. You know, even when they're the only access they have to online content is the occasional Peppa Pig video. You know, you should, you know, on YouTube or something like that, or YouTube Kids, hopefully, which is a slightly more controlled environment, you know, that you should really be saying to them, even at that stage, look, sometimes there are scary things online, or sometimes there are things that are not okay or that might worry you. You can always come and tell me about them. So getting that message in early and having lots of conversations with them, and I suppose recognizing the fact that kids are probably seeing more than we realize that they're seeing it, and you know, they will be talking about this kind of thing potentially even if they haven't actually seen it themselves, and even talking about it, you know, could really scare them. Or looking at that particular image, you know, that is being used to represent this Momo, that could really scare, you know, a child as well. It freaked me out enough just looking at it. So I think just having all the conversations, You know, keeping that open communication there, setting rules around it and keeping an eye on what they're doing is really the most important thing.
I think one of the things as well, Cliona, is I'm certainly, when I even think of my first mobile phone, whatever it was, 15 something years ago, very different obviously to what kids will have in their hand now. Yeah. It was the brick, as I used to call it. You've been really kind of monitoring changes, which I think again parents just find it hard to just stay up to speed with, and you had an annual report that you published in September. Was there any kind of particular trends that you seen emerging in the last number of years from this research?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what always shocks us is the extent of usage, you know, among 8 to 13-year-olds. And actually, we released some data for Safer Internet Day earlier this month on 8 to 10-year-olds, because we're seeing that really parents need to get on top of this at an earlier age than they probably think in a lot of cases. So, you know, we found that, like, you know, a large proportion of 8 to 10-year-olds are already on social media, are already in online gaming environments, you know, quite a few of them playing over 18 games. So we've actually, you know, recently created, we've put a lot of our efforts, and we're quite an under-resourced charity, but we've put a lot of our efforts into creating resources for parents of younger children. Because what is really important is, you know, that when parents are making decisions like, you know, when should I get my child a tablet or, you know, a smart device, or should I let them, you know, kind of go on this messaging app or, you know, this online game because all their friends are and I don't want them to be left out. When they're trying to make those decisions, you know, make them informed decisions so that they know what they're doing, because parents are finding it so hard. You know, they've said, okay, you can go on Snapchat, and then rowing back from that. You know,
yeah, so once they've opened the door. And
exactly. And even actually, once you hand over a smart device to a kid, once a child has their own independent smart device, that's a massive leap forward in terms of their online use usually, because of course the first thing that they're going to want to do is going to be to download everything that their friends are using. And it can become harder and harder, especially when it's not a family device or it's not your own device, to control that and to kind of stop the pace on it. So, you know, there's lots of good stuff that kids can do online. There's lots of great things that can get out of technology. And it's great if you're co-using technology with them, because then you can coach them into what is smart use. But what I would say to parents is, you know, don't panic about specific things like this. Be aware of them, and certainly be having the conversations in an age-appropriate way, you know, where you can. But just the most important thing is to encourage that open communication.
So that they'll talk to you.
And try and keep on top of things.
And Cliona, are parents aware? I know your research showed, I was quite shocked by it, 41% of 8 and 9-year-olds playing over 18s games. Obviously, they're over 18s for a reason in terms of some of the content that might be inappropriate or violent or whatever. Do parents know this, and how are kids kind of managing to play these games when they're over 18?
Well, yeah, I mean, our overall figure is for 8 to 13-year-olds, and, you know, from our annual report in September, we found about a third of kids had played an over-18s game. It was actually about half of the kids when you looked at the boys, and a much lesser proportion when you looked at the girls. So there was a bit of a gender divide there. I think, Wendy, in some cases it's playdates. It's, you know, in other people's houses, you know, and maybe you know, parents are very different, and some are quite restrictive, others aren't. But sometimes the parents just don't realise that, you know, an over-18s game, that the age ratings are there for a reason. And you games like, you know, Grand Theft Auto would be one example we would use all the time, because the content on that, we had a researcher make a video for us of him playing the game and picking up a prostitute and then killing her afterwards. And this is something that we would show to parents, because actually, it
is quite
shocking.
Are they shocked by it when they see it? Are parents kind of?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. And, you know, we would be very careful to be very measured in our approach. But, you know, parents are shocked, and there are parents who've seen that video and they've decided, look, you know, I'm not going to let my child play this game. You know, it's one to judge for yourself as a parent. You decide when a game is appropriate, or when it's appropriate for them to be on a, you know, a social media messaging app or whatever it is. But the reality is, it needs to be an informed decision, you know, and you really need to know what's involved in a game like Grand Theft Auto. Like, if you saw the sexual and violent, you know, possibilities in it, There are very few parents out there who would be encouraging it for their children, especially the age group that we're dealing with.
Okay, so parents listening now, Cliona, that, you know, they're kind of freaked out by this story being in the news, the Momo challenge, or even listening about Grand Theft Auto. We don't want to bury our heads in the sand, of course, but we want to feel empowered. So if there was something that parents could do today, what would your advice be?
Yeah, I mean, the best thing you can do is, you know, realize that you don't need to be a tech expert. You know, this is just another parenting challenge, like all the other ones we've had to face, you know, since you bring the baby home from the hospital. And this is something you can get on top of. There's really simple things that you can do that'll make a big difference. And the big things are, you know, if your child wants to use a particular app or game, look into it first. So there's great resources out there. Commonsensemedia.org is a really good one for quickly looking up an app or a game and seeing if it's suitable, seeing what the safeguards are and that kind of thing. And there's usually safety settings, you know, in games and in devices as well. And the most important thing then is to be having the conversations, regular conversations about what they're seeing and doing online. Make it very normal to talk about what they're doing. And make it clear they can always, always come to you if they're worried about anything, and that you'll figure it out together. And keep an eye on what they're doing, because, you know, there's lots of good they can get out of the internet, but it's not a safe environment to leave kids, you know, to their own device unless you've got them, you know, very restricted in what they're doing.
Yeah, it has to be monitored and the conversations have to be had. Cliona, thanks so much for joining us on the programme this morning. Some really good advice for parents. That's Cliona Curley. She's the programme director of Cyber Safe Ireland. If you want to find out more about Cyber Safe Ireland and the work that they do, they really try to empower children and parents to really navigate the online world safely. Their website is cybersafeireland.org.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.